So just starting off talking about some of the advancements in perioperative lung cancer treatment, just how do the ADAURA trial findings show the role of adjuvant osimertinib in EGFR mutated non-small cell lung cancer?
So the ADAURA trial was a trial run in surgically resected lung cancer in patients whose tumors had EGFR mutations. And this trial was done to compare 3 years of adjuvant osimertinib in addition to whatever else the oncologist wanted to do. So if there was adjuvant chemotherapy being given, this was done after that. So 3 years of adjuvant OC. And in this trial, we saw dramatic improvements in both disease-free survival and in overall survival when patients were started on this regimen. As we were waiting for the overall survival benefits to fully mature in this group, one of the things that was also talked about a lot was the decrease in the amount of CNS metastases. And so there was really an increased quality of life with patients not recurring as early, and also some protection against patients developing brain metastases in this setting, which really can have a dramatic impact on patients' quality of life.
So the ADAURA study evaluated the use of adjuvant osimertinib in resectable EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer stage 1B through stage 3. And this study evaluated the use of 3 years of adjuvant osimertinib therapy with or without adjuvant chemotherapy per investigator preference compared to placebo alone in this postoperative setting. And the study was important because it helped to demonstrate that patients can indeed benefit both as measured by progression-free survival and by overall survival by adding a course of an EGFR-targeted therapy in the resectable setting. This is really an extension to what we've known for some time from the more advanced or metastatic disease setting, where, of course, oncogene-targeted therapies like EGFR TKIs have drastically improved outcomes for patients with this diagnosis. It's had an additional implication. This means now that our patients with earlier stage of resectable disease also require biomarker profiling, in this case for PD-L1, also for EGFR and for ALK based on current drug approvals, to allow them to receive appropriate personalized treatment selection, not now just in the metastatic setting, but also in this early stage, earlier stage of resectable disease setting.
And so then expanding on sort of the other roles of osimertinib here, what did the LAURA trial really show about the role of this agent after chemoradiotherapy in stage 3 EGFR mutated non-small cell?
So the LAURA trial was done in a slightly different subset of patients. This was done among patients who were unable to undergo a surgical resection. And these were patients who were being treated with definitive chemo radiation. This group was then randomized to receive additional treatment with osimertinib after that. And the LAURA trial showed a dramatic benefit in progression-free survival and ultimately overall survival in this subset of patients with really excellent outcomes at 3 years. I believe their published OS was around 85%.
So the LAURA study asked the question, well, now what about for patients with slightly more advanced EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer? Is there a role for EGFR-directed therapy for patients with unresectable disease amenable to treatment with definitive chemoradiation? So in this case, again, patients with EGFR mutant disease, classical EGFR mutations, exon 19 deletions and L858R mutations, were treated with either a course of indefinite osimertinib therapy following completion of chemoradiation or placebo and followed for long-term outcomes. And this study again showed, as we've seen in the earlier stage resectable setting, that a course of treatment with targeted therapy after completion of definitive or curative intent treatment did indeed improve outcomes. I know this study was, I think, quite important because it closed a gap for us in clinical practice. We'd known for some time, of course, that EGFR-directed therapy in the metastatic setting improved outcomes for our patients. We've known that now for many years. We had already known now for some time that doing adjuvant EGFR TKI therapy after resection of slightly earlier stage disease improved outcomes. We had a very awkward gap for patients with unresectable disease receiving chemoradiation. We did not yet have data, but had a strong suspicion that there would indeed be benefit. And that's what the study showed. So we don't yet have mature overall survival data that's been reported out for this clinical trial, but the LAURA study did show significant improvements in progression-free survival if you were to add that course of consolidation osimertinib. I think what's also very sobering about this study was, frankly, the poor outcomes for patients on the control arm. You think of chemoradiation as curative intent therapy, often treating very young, healthy, fit patients with this diagnosis of EGFR mutant disease, but their relapse rate was extremely high, a median PFS around 6 months, I believe, and fairly high rates of CNS relapse as well, which can come with significant morbidity or even mortality. So the significant improvements in progression-free survival driven by using this sort of consolidation course therapy has been enough to change practice and make this now part of our standard of care, additionally at this phase of therapy.
And so then findings from the NeoAdora trial recently showed the benefit of neoadjuvant osimertinib in resectable EGFR mutated disease. So how do these findings sort of help, you know, incorporate osimertinib into the neoadjuvant setting here?
So based on the dramatic results that were seen in the Adura trial, which was using osimertinib in the adjuvant setting, and a lot of trials coming out around the same time using neoadjuvant immune checkpoint inhibitors, the NeoAdura trial makes a lot of sense for patients in this setting. Patients who have EGFR mutations are not good candidates for immune checkpoint inhibition therapy prior to surgery. So this is a group that gets excluded from immunotherapy trials. What the NeoAdura trial really did was randomize patients. There were three arms of the trial. They were either given chemotherapy plus placebo, this would be the standard of care, or they were given chemotherapy and osimertinib, or they were given osimertinib alone as a monotherapy. This was done for three cycles, each about 3 weeks long. So in the osimertinib monotherapy group, that was 9 weeks of therapy. They then went on to have a surgical resection. And after that, they were allowed to do whatever their treating physicians wanted. So for most patients, equal in all arms, 91% across the board overall, they went on to receive additional adjuvant osimertinib, which will complicate the final readouts of the results of this trial. But what the preliminary results showed, when you look at the surgical pathology and what were the response rates, there were really dramatic responses in terms of major pathologic response seen in 26% of patients who got osimertinib alone or osimertinib plus chemotherapy. For the patients who received chemotherapy alone, the response rate there for major pathologic response, which means that there's only 10% or less of remaining viable tumor, was only 2%, so really not an impressive result in that group. The challenge is now what to do with this data and what to make of it, because we have different amounts of pathologic response. But as opposed to immunotherapy, where we really think there might be some long-term immune memory involved and having these dramatic responses can really be reflective of the immune system learning, we think of tyrosine kinase inhibitors like osimertinib as working by a slightly different mechanism. They're more cytostatic. So they prevent the cells from growing, but it's a different mechanism. So it remains to be seen whether or not this will have a long-term impact on survival.
So NeoAdora is our most recent perioperative data that we've seen for patients with EGFR mutated lung cancer. And this study now asks the question, knowing what we know about treatment in the adjuvant setting or the consolidative setting in more advanced disease, what is the impact or what's the potential utility of doing a course of preoperative neoadjuvant EGFR-directed therapy? So the NeoAdora study treated patients with either one of three different arms, either osimertinib monotherapy alone for 9 weeks or three cycles, a course of osimertinib plus platinum doublet chemotherapy for three cycles, so 9 weeks treatment, or platinum doublet chemotherapy by itself, which would have been in many ways the standard if you were going to do neoadjuvant therapy prior to this data for this patient population. And then the patients underwent their planned surgery, assuming it continued to be feasible as intended at initial enrollment, and then were received in most cases the standard course of adjuvant EGFR kind of osimertinib-directed therapy postoperatively. Now, this is a very early data report that's come out from the study. It was out at ASCO of 2025. And what this showed was most of the operative endpoints, which included the primary endpoint of a major pathologic response rate. And what this showed was that by adding osimertinib, either alone or combination with chemotherapy, you saw better major pathologic response rates than chemotherapy alone, and generally still had really across the board fairly high resections rates, right, ranging around 90% for most of the patients on this clinical trial. Now, what is always a little sobering here on this data is we've seen generally very low complete path response rates for EGFR-directed therapies in EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer. And this is very much in contrary to what we've seen with checkpoint inhibitor immunotherapy for driver mutation negative lung cancer. So pathologic complete response were low across the board, but certainly at least we saw a trend towards improved major pathologic response. and some interesting trend, though very, very early, towards better event-free survival on a very, very immature early data cut with substantially more follow-up required to really understand what that data means. So my takeaway from the NEODORA study is that for many patients with EGFR mutant lung cancer, going straight to surgery and following up with adjuvant therapy, as we have been doing, can be very appropriate. Patients with earlier stage disease, N2-negative disease, small initial lesions, maybe there's some question about whether chemo is even going to be needed post-op for these earlier stage lesions. But in a patient where in other settings you might have preferred to offer a new adjuvant course of therapy, so for example, those patients with N2-positive disease, maybe even with N1 or earlier stage disease, if you're going to give new adjuvant therapy in EGFR, I would personally consider the optimal new adjuvant therapy right now to be the osimertinib plus platinum doublet chemotherapy combination. We know that's more effective than osimertinib alone in the metastatic setting, and it allows you to get everything out of the way concurrently preoperatively. That means that post-op, the patient is done with their chemotherapy and can ideally go straight into adjuvant osimertinib very, very quickly post-op with a small gap in their need to be off EGFR-directed therapy. So that's what I've been doing in my own practice with this data. I suspect our understanding of this data and its applications, though it remains somewhat complex, will continue to evolve as we get more long-term survival data as well coming out from this study.
Chemotherapy alone from NEODORA really didn't have a dramatic response within the tumor itself, but it's been the treatment practice pattern for years that a stage 3 patient generally should receive some form of induction therapy prior to surgical resection. And so it does make sense that we're using some form of neoadjuvant therapy. The question is osimertinib alone enough in this setting, or should you be mixing chemo into that? And we really don't know. I think if the plans are to give chemotherapy afterwards for a stage 3 patient, that would be appropriate to just use osimertinib monotherapy. But ideally, we do know that there does seem to be some benefit to chemotherapy, especially in stage 3 patients and probably in stage 2s. But we don't want to run the risk of a patient potentially having an adverse event before surgery and therefore not making it to the OR. So I do think it's important to prioritize limiting toxicity. Osimertinib alone is very well tolerated, so the majority of those patients did go on to receive their surgical resection. And in the absence of more definitive data in this space, I think we just have to continue making individual case-by-case based decisions.
Now, given the findings from all three of these trials, going forward, is there anything that you wanted to add about how you might make treatment sequencing decisions with osimertinib just kind of throughout all of these different settings?
Yeah, it's tricky to know exactly how now to sequence these drugs because we think of them as working very differently from immunotherapy. So there are reasons why we would maybe treat these drugs differently. I'm a firm believer in neoadjuvant therapy for immunotherapy-based regimens. For EGFR mutants, these drugs do work differently. So it's tough to know if adding them in the neoadjuvant setting adds a real benefit. It certainly seems like it doesn't hurt, and it's a limited course of therapy with very low toxicity that doesn't seem to impact the ability for patients to make it to surgical resection. The major pathologic response rates that we saw in NEODORA were actually much better, I think, than people were anticipating. So we were having a nice dramatic effect on tumors there. But most of the patients in the NEODORA trial are going on to receive additional adjuvant osimertinib therapy. So it's very difficult to tease out what the responses are going to be like there. I would say the main takeaway is that patients do need EGFR mutation testing, and that patients who are stage 2 or stage 3 probably really benefit from adjuvant osimertinib and should be going on that drug as long as they can tolerate it.
Yeah, I think these studies have been very helpful because it's helped us, at least for patients with EGFR mutant disease, to have slightly more harmonized treatment strategy. I think most of us would agree that for a patient with an actionable oncogene target, that treating patients fairly comprehensively with therapies targeting that driver, so in this case with EGFR inhibitors, seems to lead to better outcomes generally across the board when we look at clinical trials in this space. So it now allows us to offer these patients in the metastatic setting. We have our treatment standards that are built around third generation EGFR TKI-based treatments. Now in earlier stage disease, we also have really between all the way from stage 1B up through stage 3, unresectable disease, treatment options that incorporate an EGFR-directed therapy as well. And where we have data readouts, they've been showing better progression-free survival, hopefully trends towards better overall survival or demonstrated overall survival in the case of resectable disease. This is primary impact, as it means we, as I mentioned before, we really need to be biomarker profiling our patients. So right now for a patient with earlier stage disease, until you know their biomarker profile, so that means primarily their EGFR and ALK status, and to some extent their PD-L1 status as well, you really don't know what the best optimal perioperative treatment strategy will be. This has become really critical as we think about more and more utilizing things like neoadjuvant chemoimmunotherapy strategies or perioperative chemoimmunotherapy strategies as our default for patients with resectable or earlier stage disease. Here, you really can't get started until you know what a patient has for their biomarkers, you really don't know whether they're going to be on an immunotherapy-based track or a targeted therapy-based track when choosing their perioperative treatment strategy. I talked a lot about EGFR, so we've been talking about the various EGFR and osimertinib incorporating studies across these various disease stages. Very similar things could be said, for example, about ALK-positive lung cancer. There's adjuvant ALK TKI-directed therapy now with alectinib as well. And for many of our other non-smoking associated drivers, similar concerns have been raised about the role of neoadjuvant chemoimmunotherapy for this patient population. So about only EGFR, ALK, and PD-L1 might be required by current national guidelines. I think we're absolutely in a space where we're more and more thinking about what is the role going to be of more comprehensive profile and looking for some of these other drivers like RET, HER2, ROS1, other things that might have real impact on treatment decision-making for patients with earlier stage disease, particularly in younger patients and patients with more limited history of tobacco use, where these sort of drivers are going to be enriched. And they indeed impact clinical outcomes long-term to know these results early.
Thinking about optimal duration of therapy and treatment discontinuation considerations, do the factors that influence your decisions to discontinue osimertinib in a patient, would these vary between the neoadjuvant and adjuvant settings?
So we don't know the optimal duration of therapy. In the neoadjuvant study, it was done for 3 weeks times three cycles, so 9 weeks. And in the adjuvant study, it was done for 3 years. You have to make decisions based on how well patients are tolerating things. I think in the neoadjuvant setting, it's critical that those patients who are initially surgical candidates do go on to be able to receive their surgical resection. So it's very important to limit toxicity there. In the adjuvant setting, long term, I do think it sometimes can be a harder sell to patients to treat with adjuvant therapy as opposed to potentially a metastatic setting where many patients are very motivated to stay on the drugs. In adjuvant setting, these are patients who we don't think of as having any sites of disease, and they're really taking this for prophylaxis. So sometimes it can be harder to motivate patients if they are having side effects to stay on the drugs. And again, these decisions are made by oncologists and patients and individual conversations.
Yes, we think about treatment duration. There's a couple different components of that. We can think about intended total duration, the course of therapy that is being discussed at the start of treatment. And we can think about the probability or decision-making about when do you discontinue therapy during treatment, say for toxicities or if there's concern about disease progression. And those are both really important questions. And they're probably thought about a little differently in a curative intent or perioperative setting than we do in a metastatic setting. So first, total duration of therapy. So in the metastatic setting, of course, treatment is until disease progression, and we hope patients will be on therapy as long as possible. It means they're having a good response. In the adjuvant therapy setting right now, the course of treatment is 3 years, so post-op. And for patients who've had chemoradiation right now in the consolidation therapy setting, reflecting probably the greater overall risk of relapse, that course of therapy right now is indefinite course therapy. That means you have to have a really upfront conversation with patients about thinking about what it means to be on long-term treatment and thinking what it means to make sure we're having appropriate supportive care and appropriate management of toxicities. We're considering potentially very long courses of treatment. So, for example, I think very early awareness of an optimal supportive care for lower-grade toxicities like dry skin or acneiform skin rash or diarrhea is going to be particularly critical for these patients who are receiving therapy after curative intent treatment, where these toxicities may be less tolerable or less acceptable in the long term to a patient than in the metastatic setting, where you know you're treating active disease, which you can visibly see on scan. And that requires both active engagement by the physician and also active acknowledgement with patients that we're going to have an ongoing relationships, we think about how are we going to best manage toxicities long-term for this. Now, I do hope that one day we'll be in a state where we'll have novel or more exciting tools to help us guide duration of therapy. So I'm not using this in clinical practice right now, but certainly there's a lot of novel development of plasma-based monitoring tools, MRD-based testing, plasma DNA-based testing, think about pathologic response-based testing. So we hope that maybe one day we'll be able to more personalize this sort of treatment duration for patients and understand maybe some patients really do need very long course therapy. Maybe patients who don't require long course therapy or may do very well very short course treatment. And that's the next challenge for us in the field is to understand how can we better stratify for patients who really do need to commit to a very long course of treatment. And of course, there are ongoing clinical trials evaluating different durations of therapy. So for example, there's a clinical trial looking at 5 years instead of 3 years adjuvant osimertinib. So we know that when patients come off, they do start to experience some relapse in some cases. So could a longer course of treatment be beneficial again for some patients? So I think more to know in the coming years, but for now, at least we have our standard courses that we're using in clinical practice.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.